I've been managing my team for just over a year now, and I feel like I'm caught in a never-ending hiring loop. I brought in someone who checked all the boxes. She was a highly skilled software engineer, but could not collaborate with the team. So after months of trying to make it work, she ended up resigning, and I'm left exactly where I started. So we can't keep wasting time on this, but I feel like we keep on missing the mark. What am I doing wrong?
Hi, I'm Dr. Steven Stein, clinical psychologist, emotional intelligence expert, and founder of MHS, a leading publisher of scientific psychological assessments and talent development solutions. If you feel like recruiting is the bane of your existence, don't worry, I've got you covered. Let's ditch the old-fashioned interview process and learn how to recruit with success. In order to build a strong team, you really need to find the right people. And sometimes, that means looking beyond the qualifications listed out in a resume. You have to dig a little deeper and figure out who it is you really need to complete your team. As a co-founder of MHS, I've had to do my fair share of hiring, and it wasn't always easy. You can spend hours shifting through resumes, conducting interviews. Part of being an effective leader means acknowledging the fact that these biases exist and creating a process that is really aware of those biases. Luckily, we have Drew Bird and Carlos Cadigan on the podcast today to talk about ways that we can improve our hiring process and build a team around our company culture. Carlos, Drew, welcome to the podcast. Great to see you guys again. We all know each other, but there's a lot of people out there who maybe don't know the both of you. Why don't we do a little bit of introduction? Carlos, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Steve. It's great to see you both. My name is Carlos Cadigan, and I am a talent selection and development consultant at MHS. First generation Canadian, and I'm very passionate about organizational culture, behavioral values, and the impact of leadership to those things. So thanks for having me, Steve.
Great to have you, Carlos. Drew, how about yourself?
My name is Drew Bird. I am the founder and principal of the EQ Development Group. We are based in Kelowna, British Columbia, and I've been working with MHS now for the past 10 plus years, primarily around the emotional intelligence streams, but also hard as resilience and some of the other assessments. And yeah, very passionate about leadership and organizational development.
So today's topic, we're going to be talking about selection, and I guess selection at various levels of the organization. And probably the most common method or technique people out there use to select candidates for different positions are the all famous interview. They interview their candidates. And this has been around since, I don't know, probably hundreds of years, right? You're both pretty familiar with the process of interviews. And I guess my first question to each of you, what are some of the common pitfalls of traditional interviewing methods when we're acquiring new talent?
There's many, but I would list off a few. Some of them come off pretty obvious once we talk about them, but in real time isn't always obvious. And I think one of those would be obviously stereotyping. And so once we get into a position where we're judging someone on a preference, I'm hiring someone from sales and there's a gentleman or a woman friend who's very tall, dressed very well, attractiveness, stuff like that. And so stereotyping, which none of that stuff has anything to do with the actual skill set needed for the role. So that's one. Another one with interviewing is inconsistency in questions. So when you think about that, we're trying to select people from like a pool of talented people. And if you're asking different questions to different people, what happens is you start to miss certain things. And so what if there's a really important question I wanted to ask Steve, but I actually asked it to Drew? Drew gave me a really great answer, but Steve never had that opportunity. How does that influence who I select for the role? And then I think the last one, which is pretty obvious for all of us because we're human, this is how it works, is first impressions, right? It's powerful what happens with us within 10th of a second when we first meet someone. We instantly make a judgment on someone based on their dress, height, the way they look, all those things, the way they speak. And so that first impression, again, has nothing to do with probably the skills that you're looking to measure for this role. So I think those are the three things that are really challenging when we're first doing an interview.
Drew, what are some of the examples that you've seen in terms of interviewing?
The first impression thing, the things that we all know about ourselves, we all know we do these things. So I think a lot of people, even though on an intellectual level, they can understand things like first impressions, personal biases, personal judgments, they think they're immune to them somehow, which we know scientifically from research, they're absolutely not. But I think people have this belief that they are imbued with this judgment factor. I can make a good judgment. I can make a good call. We have this process that we use called bias deduction. So if you know that first impressions are such a powerful factor, then you can keep that in mind. So when somebody comes into the room, doesn't mean you're not going to form a first impression. I think some of the other things that can really be problematic is that we make judgments based on people's background and history without really learning what they're about. We've got their resume in front of us. We're looking down their resume. We see the last organization they worked for. We have a judgment about that last organization. Maybe we know somebody else that works there, and we ascribe the what we know about this other person to the organization as a whole. I've seen that a number of times. And then, of course, there's the saying the wrong thing when somebody comes in and they answer a question, but they answer it incorrectly, and oh, it's all going to go downhill from here. And so recognizing that different people deal with the stress of interview situations differently, and sometimes mistakes are made, and it's a bit of space and grace, I think, are very valuable around that to try and provide opportunity for people to course correct if they need to.
So those are quite a number of the pitfalls that we see in interviews, and not even to mention that studies that have looked at interviews and job performance, the correlation is extremely low. It's not a really good predictor. So you may be looking for a salesperson and you say, this person doesn't show a lot of energy. They're more introverted. But as we know, there's some really super salespeople who tend to be introverted. But nevertheless, I guess we can all agree that interviews aren't going away. People are going to continue these. And we'll talk about other things they can use in addition to that. But they're going to be around for a long time. So I guess my next question is, if we're going to go and do these interviews anyway, knowing about these pitfalls, what can you do in terms of preparing yourself before you do that interview?
Practice makes perfect. I think one of the challenges that many leaders face is they don't actually do that many interviews. And so trying to find opportunities to be included in interview processes, to be part of panels, or another thing that we can do to try and increase the clarity and reality that we're seeing in interviews. So even if you're not the hiring manager, trying to get into a position where you're volunteering to be on panels so you can see how other more experienced people run interviews, I think is very valuable. I remember the first time I ran an interview for a position I was recruiting for, and you realize that this is the first time you're doing this and you don't really know what you're doing, and HR is going to come along, but they're going to sit off to one side and this is your show. And you just realize in that moment how much you don't know about it. So my primary advice would be try and be part of a panel, not the hiring manager, for a good number of interviews so you can begin to learn a little bit about how they work. That would be the biggest thing you could do.
Carlos, what about you? Did you do something to prepare yourself, get yourself, I don't know, in the right frame of mind or way to perceive things before you do an interview?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Steve. And Drew just mentioned it's preparation, right? Whether you're seasoned or never done it before. I think first thing, and we'll talk about this probably later, emotional intelligence, self-awareness, right? Like understanding that we all have our own kind of cultural and behavioral values, and there's preferences that we have. And so what happens when people come to us that are juxtaposed to that? And so what I mean by that is, what is our biases that we can be bringing to this interview? And instead of talking about biases, we might talk about and naming them. I really think it's important to recognize the mechanisms that actually create those environments. What I mean is, so time pressure, fatigue, and distractions. So here you know, Drew, never interviewed before. He doesn't have a panel. He's doing it by himself. Probably some ambiguity around the role and how it's going to fit. And now he's got to do this thing with all that time pressure and the fatigue. It just exacerbates our own biases and our blind spots. And so I think it's really important to have a very succinct process. And so things that I've done, which is have a user guide, an interview guide that's for certain job roles, but it's uniform. Everyone uses it. I use it. HR person uses it. It's from the same document. Another thing is having standard questions. Same questions, again, same role, same questions for every candidate, making sure we hit all the questions that are important. Drew mentioned it, having a panel, multiple interviewers to make sure we're checking our shoulders and our blind spots. And then finally, trying to recruit from a wider array of places and sources, I think is really important as well. Those are the kind of things that will help some clarity around if we're hiring for the right person.
So Carlos, I know you've been doing a lot of work around the area of bias and selection. So what happens when you're doing an interview and I guess suddenly you realize that whoa, maybe I'm going off track or some bias starts to kick in? Like, how do you stop and correct that thought process?
It's a great question, and it's powerful, I think, not just for interviewing, for any problem that we're trying to solve or any decision we're trying to make. And really what you want to do is reframe that thought that you have, say something that's alternative to that, and then ask more questions. So Steve comes in, like, God, yeah, I wanted a salesperson, but he's shy and introverted. This is going to be a problem. I got to reframe that thought to, what am I looking for in a salesperson in today's market? I'm looking for someone who's consultative, someone who's got curiosity and empathy, and who can deeply listen to somebody. Just start reframing those things in real time and to get yourself out of those. So I would say reframe, ask a question, and say something, ask a couple more questions, just to make sure to check your own assumptions, if that makes sense.
We've been talking a lot about the individual and what we're looking for in the individual, but we're also bringing someone into an organization, to a culture. So I guess, Drew, when we bring someone into a situation like that, how do we take into account the fit between the individual and the culture?
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because for decades, we've been looking at the idea of fit, and are we looking for supplementary or complementary fit? Do we want somebody to come in and shake things up a little bit, or do we want somebody that's going to come and slot straight in? And every situation is different, obviously, and the hiring manager is going to be the only person that really understands what they're looking for in that respect. But then I think we've got to start asking better questions around suitability. It's such an interesting example, because in an interview, there's high probability that we want to hire somebody, obviously, and that somebody wants to get hired. So there's opportunity in there for us both to be generous with the truth about what it's like to work here. Similarly, the candidates could be generous with the truth about what they can bring to the culture. And so I think asking very open-ended questions that support a broad range of answers. For example, if the hiring manager says, we have a very high-paced environment here, how well do you think you would fit in with that? The answer is, I love high-paced environments, which gives you a different feedback than, what kind of work environments do you enjoy? And then hearing from them what they say, and then I think allowing them to give some of that quality, not just echo back to us what we think we want to hear. And of course, behavior-based interview questions that focus on culture can allow us to mine into those areas where we're trying to explore. Do you prefer to work in a collaborative environment, or do you prefer to make decisions on your own? Can you tell us about a recent example where you worked on something in either way? And just to get that people to sort of surface that, I think is really important. And going back to Carlos's comment, if you have interview guides that give you guidance on these questions, even if they're asked verbatim, then I think it's much easier to do that cross comparison from results, replies.
So we all know how important it is to really hire the right person, especially in a variety of different positions. I'm just wondering if either of you can think of an example or a time when it made a real difference in terms of hiring the right person, really contributed to the organizational success.
I could think of one. I used to manage a sales team, and when I took the team over, my boss had told me that we need to move on from some people. The culture in the team is not great. And so, which of course sets up some all your own presumptions or assumptions about what's happening. And as I went through and started talking to individuals, I realized that it wasn't about the work, it wasn't about the organization, but it was really about a mismatching of values of people on the team. There was one or two salespeople who were notorious for stealing leads and checking in on clients that weren't theirs and trying to find ways to play client needs against another salesperson to the sales manager, and just doing some underhanded things. But those people who were doing the unedited things were the highest performance of the sales team. And so they always were able to skate by. And I made this very strategic decision after doing enough interviewing and moving on from those two leaders in sales, because no matter what we do in moving forward, as people leave and retain new people, these people are always going to be eroding the culture. And so I think what's really important is when we say we're hired for culture fit, to be honest, if my shoulders go up, I cringe. Because a lot of us don't even know what our culture is. And I think as we move into leadership, it gets even more harder, because we're isolated, not even by design, right? We're away from the everyday. We're doing other things that we need to think of the future of the business. And so, yes, there's these missions and tenets and values that we have on our boards, but and maybe us in a room, Steve and Drew and I agree that's the most important thing. But what does that look like in the middle management? What does that look like for the individual contributor? It's probably different. And so I realized that we were just repeating, rinse, repeating the same thing. And so I really decided at that point to unearth what was really important to us. And for us, it was curiosity in a person, and it was their ability to effectively listen and have a perspective taking. And so I didn't care if you had 10 years experience in sales or 10 months. I did things that made us believe that you had those values that were important to us. Those people came in, the culture turned to more positive, and everyone started to be a high performing individual, work better together. We collaborated across functions and other departments. And so I think it's really important to really dig into your culture beyond pulse surveys and other things to figure out what's really at the root here and make sure we're not rinse and repeating that same kind of behavior every time we go and interview and try to bring on someone to the team.
And one of the areas we're kind of leaning into in the direction we're going has to do with something that's dear to all of us, right? Emotional intelligence. So how do we factor in those emotional intelligence skills in the selection process?
There's a number of ways you can do it. I think the biggest one, if we stick with the interviews for a second, is to really ask those questions on the elements, on the aspects of emotional intelligence that are valuable within our organizations or within our groups or our environments. It's funny, you just asked Steve about the hire that you brought in that sort of surprisingly successful. I remember recruiting a project lead, and during the interview process, and we were asking emotional intelligence based behavior interview questions, it became really clear that this person had an abrasive edge to them, which was going to probably aggravate some of the people in the team a little bit. That aggravation was needed. That was the problem we had. The problem we had was that we were not holding each other accountable, me included, to things that needed to get done. And as a result, things were sliding. By using EQ as part of the interview process, we really got to talking about things like, will you push or will you advocate for a deadline, even with people more senior to you in the organization, if you believe that needs to be done? And then hearing this person say, you're paying me to push the deadlines, right? Yeah, then yes, obviously that's my job. And I believe that because we were able to understand a bit more about their EQ and their EQ profile, we were able to bring somebody in who really did what needed to get done in that setting at that time, which was to bring a bit of heat to people that were not meeting deadlines. I think that's what EQ and the interview process allows you to do, is to get just so much of a better understanding about who that person is likely to be, no guarantees, when they actually begin to work.
Before we continue, I want to take a second to talk about some of the terms you're going to hear Carlos, Drew, and myself use, such as the acronym EQI 2.0. That refers to the emotional quotient inventory. That's a tool that we use to measure someone's emotional intelligence. It looks into our ability to recognize and manage our own emotions, understand and empathize with others, and helps us navigate social situations. Introducing tools like these at the start of the hiring process can help give context to how a person prefers to interact with others at work, manage their tasks, and work alongside a team. This can be helpful when considering if someone's a good culture fit, as you'll hear us explain now. So as we get into the sort of EQ area, EI area, let's shift a bit from the interview process to the assessment process, which we see often as more objective. So how does one use assessments, and assessments like the EQI 2.0 or emotional intelligence types assessments, as part of that process? A lot of people wonder how it fits in to what we're doing.
Yeah, I think you just said it, which is great. We're all trying to objectify our hiring processes, right? And you do that through assessments. That's a great tool. How I've seen it been used is really trying to understand, for, as we talked about earlier, that culture fit, but also for someone, we realize now more than ever, as the world moves pretty quickly, technology, everything, we need to collaborate. We need to collaborate better. And so emotional intelligence has been often used with clients I work with from a senior level, hiring someone outside the organization, but also working with emerging leaders and selecting people internally to move forward using their emotional intelligence. So they'll use it to, I think Drew was alluding to this, to map it to key competencies that they have identified are important to lead within this organization. So they'll leverage the EQI to measure someone's interpersonal relationship skills and how they manage stress, which has been such an important topic for the last couple of years. What's the resiliency like? Things like that. And so they use those tools to really get a kind of holistic view of that participant. I think cognitive skills and personality, but specifically the EQI, has really helped them, again, round out that person's experience and giving them a good sense of how that person will show up. Because as we all know, as we look through the organization and you're moving into those roles, especially in the leadership, it's technical skills will always be important. They're there, but it's less about that at that level. Now it's about how do I inspire people? What's my authenticity like? What's my coaching ability? How do I move people into places that they're not comfortable with and still stay with us? And so emotional intelligence has been a huge part in a lot of clients in terms of their selection.
Yeah, I think it's a field that there's so much opportunity that's untapped at this point. But one of my favorite ways is using assessment results to inform behavioral-based interview questions. So one of the things that we do with clients is we take EQI results and we have somebody who's experienced doing this, because I do think it's quite a skill, look at the results. They've come up with behavioral-based interview questions that give the candidate the opportunity to talk about areas in which they are strong, but also in areas where they may have opportunity to grow in as well, based on their EQ results. And so, for example, if we were working with somebody that had a high level of assertiveness and perhaps a high level of independence, but a lower level of interpersonal relationships, we might formulate a question around, tell us about a time when you made a decision largely on your own, but then later learned that there was information that you were missing. What was the situation? What did you learn from that? And those kinds of questions, yeah, absolutely, you can bring them in just from a general interview bank, but the EQI or EQ assessments allow you to shape those questions very meaningfully. One small caution, of course, is that going back to Carlos's point earlier on, that means that it's very difficult to cross-compare answers because this person's EQ results different to this person, so the questions are likely to be different. But I think there's a power in doing that. Some people, particularly in interview situations, are a little shy or reluctant to talk about aspects of their personality or to be revealing about who they are or how they really want to show up. And I think shaping behavioral interview questions using results from an assessment like the EQI really give you a sort of an opportunity to say to the person, tell us about what you love. Tell us about who you are as a person. What gets you up in the morning? Who do you want to bring to work? What's the persona, the other parts of your personality you want to bring to work? And I think assessment results give us the opportunity to do that. So I think as long as we use them as decision support tools, it's another source of information.
Yeah, I think that's something that we all agree on that's really important, that it is really an additional source of information. It's not like a cutoff. You didn't get this score, we're not going to hire you. We're all very careful about that in terms of gathering more information. And then what do I do with the information? That leads to follow-up questions, confirmatory or disconfirmatory. Is this person really assertive? And how can they demonstrate that to me with either examples from the past or situation we set up now in terms of doing it? So what I'm going to hit you guys with is something that we like to end up with. And what that is if you could think of the future of work, where the world's going in terms of the world of work, and summarize it in one word, what would that word be?
So if I was to pick one word, I'd have to say nimble. I think people, and this is not an original thought I had, I've been reading a lot about it recently, people have to be willing to bring a skill set and recognize that the job that they have as it exists today could be different 2, 3, 4, 5 months or 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. And recognizing that we are not, defined by a specific role, and we should, hold on to job titles loosely, because things are changing very quickly. And I think when people sometimes hear that, it can be a little bit disconcerting, because of course, if you've trained as an accountant or if you've trained as a project manager and you're told you can't be a project manager anymore, that I think people will have a sense of identity tied up with that. Much more empowering is to say, you are somebody that can sift through piles of detail and find order, as many great project managers do. And once you realize that it's the skill sets that you possess that define you and will have a role in your future rather than a role, I think that's really important.
Carlos, what's your word for the future?
I'm going to go with human-centric. I think with this age we're in, fourth industrial age, you're calling it, and the advancement of technology, I know there's a lot of fear of humans being replaced. I actually think it's going to be more needed than ever. And I think what's going to do, and it's already started doing, is changing the way we work with people. I think historically, to present-day management, we've defined getting things done through people. And I think starting now and moving forward is going to be about putting people first, which basically what I mean is that notion of leaving mostly who you are at the door before you come to work. Those things will start to melt away, and we're going to start to have to manage and lead people who bring their full selves to work. And what does that mean? I think the same thing for our customers. I hear it all the time about purpose-driven and customer-centric and humans first. I think we're going to focus on getting back to, through the screens and in person, of getting to understand people and treating people as people. I think that's going to be the big thing.
People come first, and people will always be in the center of what we do. And that's what we interact with. I don't want to interact with some AI bot answering my questions. I want guys like you who've been out in the world and have those human experiences and can really relate back to us and all our listeners for that. That's been great. Really enjoyed having you guys. A great conversation, and hopefully we'll do it again sometime. Thanks.
Anytime.
Awesome. Great to see you, Steve.
So excited to be able to have Drew and Carlos on the show. It's so important to remember that we're working with people at the end of the day and to prioritize empathy in the recruitment process. We know what it's like to be on the other side of the table or the screen. We're nervous to make a first impression, and not to mention the post-interview anxiety. If you're interested in learning more about using assessments alongside your interviews, I've linked a few resources in the description, including more information on the EQI 2.0. And make sure to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you soon for another episode of Work Therapy.